Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Well, I can't tell you how nice it is to be here with you. We do these events at different places, and you never know when you're looking out into the audience whether you're looking out at a hostile face or you're looking out at a friendly face. And the fact that I'm back here at home at Bethel, I know who the hostile faces are, and I know who the friendly faces are, and I won't tell you which ones I think are the hostile faces. Ted Windle's not here tonight, so there are less hostile faces than if Ted was here. It really is my pleasure to be here. It really is coming home. There are so many of you who have had an influence in my life. There are many of you who have either been involved in my life in youth groups or in Sunday school classes, in Oshpakun, and in other ways. And I would hope that in some way that Rachel and I will make you proud being involved with RZIM. If you're not familiar with the organization, you should know that it is probably the preeminent voice for Christ in the academic and cultural shapers in the United States, Canada, and around the world. Ravi's associate in England recently spoke at the White House. Ravi speaks around the world. And to have two young people who have grown up either in Sault Ste. Marie or St. Joe's Island, both coming from the fellowship of the Island Bible Chapel and Bethel Bible Chapel, to now be working in a full-time and in a sort of an associate role with RZIM, I think says much more about our background and the training that we've received. And I wish that there were people like my grandmother, like Marion and Jean Douglas and Edwards, who could be here. Because those are people who framed me and have shaped me, and many of you here. So as we continue to discuss and dialogue with people who shape the views of our culture, whether those are politicians or university professors or university students, know that your work and your labor has not been in vain over these years, those of you who have poured your life into us and those of you who are pouring your life into some of the people who are here. So I just want to say thank you, and we hope that this weekend, as Paul said, you aren't going to get all of the answers to all of these questions that are stuck up here on the wall. There are just far too many of them. They are far too intricate. They are difficult, and people wrestle with them for thousands of years, some of those questions. But we will hopefully give you a framework and perhaps instill some confidence in you that even if the answer isn't provided, that there are answers out there to be found. We went through a number of questions that we asked are questions that you would find perhaps troubling to receive. And you need to know that those would be questions that I think I speak for Rachel as well, that those are difficult questions for us to answer as well. We've spent some time doing a lot of research on that and going through a system of education to help us think through these answers. But please don't feel in any way as though that there is a chasm between some of the things that we do and what you're able to do. If you put in the time and did the reading, especially those of you sitting in about the first three or four rows, you could be well equipped to help your friends and help them to understand the truth that you have come to know. And I would encourage you to do that. There's nothing better that you can invest your life in than equipping and training yourself to help somebody else see the truth. One of the questions that gets asked perhaps most, and Campus Crusade for Christ did a survey of the major universities in Ontario several years ago, and they said, what are the top 10 questions that you would like an answer to? And in every survey, at least the third question, or it ranked as the third question when they looked at all of the surveys combined, was this: what is the meaning of life? Why are we here? Not why are you here individually, not what is the purpose of your existence. Are you to marry this person? Are you to go to this university? Are you to fulfill this role in society? No, that's not the question. It's the bigger question of why are we all here? What is the purpose of humanity? Where have we come from? Because that question, how you answer it, will affect everything else in life. It will affect the question of morality, how we should behave, whether or not we have any value or dignity, how you know things, where you're going when you die, and a whole host of other questions as well. It's the most important question I think that anyone can ask is, why are we here? The answer to that question will shape the framework for how you answer every other question in life. There's an episode of Everyone Loves Raymond that continues to come on in reruns that I think is perhaps the best illustration of how difficult it is to answer this question. And I would like you to think, as we're watching the clip, it's about 8 minutes long, but it is well worth the watch. I would like you to ask yourself, how would you answer this question?
Just play with my dolls.
Oh, good. Good.
Thank you.
Listen, the other day you asked questions about babies and stuff.
When you started sneezing?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Anyway, I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that now.
Okay.
Good, good. Okay. Let me try to explain a few things. All right. Okay. Here's what happens. When a man and a woman love each other very much, they get married. And then sometimes they decide to make a baby.
Why are there babies?
Right, right. Okay, I'm going to get to that. Okay. What a man and a woman do is...
No, I mean, I know that the man and the woman have to do something, but why are we born? Why has God put us here?
Because that's what?
If we all go to heaven when we die, then why does God want us here first?
Why does God want us here?
Yeah, why? Why are we here, Daddy?
Yeah, I heard you. I heard you. You don't want to talk about sex?
No.
You ever hear the word fallopian? Okay, all right. Okay, you really want to know why God wants us here first? That's a good question. You see, God is up in heaven, and, well, honey, it's very crowded up there.
It is?
Yeah. And you don't want to be in heaven if it's crowded, right? I mean, remember when we went to Disney World, how crowded that was? Huh? I mean, it was fun, but it was too crowded, right? So God, he sends us down to Earth for a little while to ease the heavenly congestion.
What?
Hushu! Oh, here we go again. Hushu! Hushu! I don't want you to catch this. I don't want you to... Hushu! Hushu! I'll be back in a minute. Hushu!
Like,
I got blindsided!
What? What do you mean?
I don't even want to talk about sex. She started asking questions about life. Why did God put us here? Crazy stuff like that.
Wow, so what did you say?
I told her we're here because heaven is crowded.
You said heaven is crowded?
I got ambushed!
Oh my God, Ray, you gotta get back up there.
No, you go up there.
No, you're the one that wants to prove he's mature. Huh? Why can't you have this discussion with your daughter?
Because I studied for the sex one. I wasn't ready for this. I don't just have a switch that can make me smart.
No kidding. to, you know, because...
Wow, look at here. Yeah, a little bit smarty pants. Maybe it is fallopian.
Allie just started asking some questions about where babies come from, and Ray was going to talk to her about it. But
wait a minute. You're going to talk to a child about SCX?
Marie, if she's asking questions, we have to answer her.
No, you don't. I mean, my boys had all sorts of questions, but I had Frank wait until they were teenagers to talk to them.
Nobody talked to me.
Can we please stop? Look, it turns out Allie doesn't want to know how we get here. She wants to know why we're here. Why God put us on Earth. And she's waiting for Ray to answer her.
What's wrong with you? It's simple. Oh, okay, yeah. We're going to learn the meaning of life from a guy who once threw his shoe at a swan. That's called protecting your sandwich. Listen to me. Here's what life is. You're born, you go to school, you go to work, you die. That's it. That's all. Cannoli Marie.
Listen, we're not talking about what we do while we're here, Dad.
Yeah, the big question is why we're here in the first place. You know, I've spent many a night lying in bed thinking about this kind of stuff. Life's imponderables. Where are we in the big scheme of things?
Don't gotta be a pretty one, just grab something.
I think Allie's too young to be worrying about things like this.
No, I'm proud of her. I love it that she's such an independent thinker.
If she's so independent, why can't she figure this out herself?
Ray, listen, just get up there and tell her that God put us on Earth to help each other. It's simple, it's direct, it's a good way for her to live her life.
What are you talking about? That doesn't answer anything. Well, what are you telling me that God said, Earth, let's see, what should I put there?
That's your God?
Yeah.
No way. It's got to be deeper and cool. Hello, I'm God.
Keep going, Raymond. I think you're a wonderful God.
Thank you. So what did God say? Hey, I'm going to put some humans on Earth so they can help each other. Or I could just skip humans altogether and go hit a bucket of balls.
Oh, I know.
About the beginning of time. What was it before that? Before time? Nothing? I mean, what is nothing? How could there be nothing? This doesn't bother anybody else?
Okay, everybody, listen to me. Listen. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Okay. Let there be light. Okay. It might take me a minute more.
A minute more? Marie, religious scholars spend their entire lives trying to answer this question. You're not just going to flip through the Bible and find the meaning of life.
Oh, ye of little faith. That's in here somewhere, too.
Want to know what's in the Bible, why don't you talk to Father Hubley?
Hey, that's right. You know what? It's his job to know these things.
What, are you going to call him?
Yeah. What are we putting the money in that basket for? Me and the family were just sitting around, and we had a quick question for you. What is the meaning of life? So if you could get back to us as soon as possible, we'd appreciate it, right? We're kind of waiting. Okay. Thank you. Goodbye. God bless you.
Do you know the fruit fly only lives one day?
Huh? You okay there?
One day. What's his meaning of life, huh? Maybe there's no meaning of life for any one of us. I mean, really, am I any different than the fruit fly?
The fruit fly doesn't question why he's here. That's what makes us different. And I don't know, maybe that's kind of the meaning of life. Never knowing the answer, but always wondering about it.
So God made us smart enough to know that there's an answer, but not smart enough to figure it out?
Come on!
Questions that fits in the top three of questions that university students want to know. Why am I here? Why are we here? What is the meaning of life? The way that you will answer that question is the same way that all of those people in the show answered that question, and it will be according to your worldview. Whatever worldview you carry with you is the way that you will answer that question. And when we talk about worldviews, we're talking about a deep set of beliefs that we all have. Sometimes they're conscious and we carry them around and we know what we believe about issues, but oftentimes they are assumed beliefs or things that we presuppose without thinking very much about. A presupposition that you all carry around with you is that time always goes forward. None of you are worried and hoping tonight that as it gets closer to the end of the evening, that time will reverse itself and you'll have to listen to me talk for twice as long. Nobody is worried about that. Maybe you are now that I've brought it up, but no one ever worries that time will reverse itself, right? You never worry that when you bake a cake a certain way and you put it in the oven, it's going to come out anything else other than a cake. There are things in our world that are uniform. Time always goes one way. These are deeply held presuppositions that we run our life by, but yet we don't think about them very often. They're actually the things we think with. They're not the things that we think about. Our presuppositions, or the set of beliefs that form our worldview, will determine how we answer the question, what is the meaning of life? A worldview answers questions like, why do I believe that this is wrong and this is right? Why do I believe that, pick a particular issue that you're passionate about, why do I believe that, as opposed to its opposite? Worldviews also tell us where we're going after we die. What is our ultimate destiny? What is everyone's ultimate destiny? But the most important worldview belief that you carry around inside of you, and everyone carries it, is what is the origin of either humanity or what is the ultimate form of reality? Is everything that exists ultimately just something physical like this? Is the universe all that there is and perhaps laws operating inside of the universe? Or is there something greater than the universe? Is there something greater than just the physical? Is there a spiritual aspect to people? Is there a soulish aspect to our world? Is there a God? Is there not a God? The way that you answer that question, which is the fundamental question, will determine how you answer the question of what is the meaning of life. Because if there is a God, and he is the ultimate form of reality, if he is the ground of all things that exist, that will radically affect what you think the meaning of life is, compared to the belief that the universe is all that there is nothing outside of the universe, everything that exists, exists in some form of material or physical type of way. That will shape what you think the meaning of life ultimately is. Worldviews are like glasses that we wear. They affect how we see things. Now, some of you in here are wearing glasses tonight, and you wear them because they help you see the world better. They help you see the world as it really is. But if I were to ask to borrow your glasses and put them on, they would not help me see the world as it really is. They would actually make the world look a lot worse to me. Now, if I was to wear someone's glasses who has a mild prescription, I would be able to get around in the world fairly well. It would be somewhat distorted. The world wouldn't look to me. It wouldn't be given to me the way that it really is, because the glasses are distorting the way things are. But if I wore someone's glasses that had a really strong prescription, I would have a much more difficult time getting around in the world, because it would really distort things for me. For the person who wears the glasses, it's the right prescription for them. But it's not the right prescription for me. Well, I have a set of glasses here tonight that I think represent what will happen or the effects of choosing a worldview that is not in accordance with the way the world really is. If you choose a worldview or you're operating on some deeply held beliefs that are not in accordance with reality, you will see the world perhaps not only as skewed, but you will see the world perhaps as backwards and actually upside down. I have a set of glasses right here, and I need one Very brave volunteer. Thank you, Seth Whitley. That causes everything that I see to be completely upside down. So, Seth, go ahead and put those on. All right. Okay, turn around and look at the audience, Seth. Okay, can you see me? Okay, you see this ball? Okay, all I want you to do is catch it. It's nice and soft. It won't hurt you when you miss it. Here it comes. Thanks. Okay, I'm just going to roll it to you. Are you ready? Here we go. That was closer. Okay. You see your dad?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just toss him the ball. Yeah, that's not too bad, not too bad. All right, one more time. Here we go. Okay, thanks. Any other volunteers? Anybody else want to try? Okay, right here. I saw your hand first. What's your name?
CJ.
CJ, here we go. Are you ready? Okay, why don't you just walk over to me? Just keep coming. Well, that's pretty good. Okay, stop right there. Okay, you ready? Here comes the ball. You have to be able to stand if you're going to catch it. Here it comes. Ah, that's better. All right. Thank you very much, CJ.
Okay.
All right. We should have had you sign a waiver before we gave you that. Worldviews are like glasses. If you have the correct set of glasses on, as many of you can attest, it makes the world clearer for you. If you have the wrong worldview, and if it is categorically wrong, if it is really wrong on the very the foundational question of what is the ultimate foundation of life? Where do we come from? What is the origin of humanity? If you choose a worldview that is opposite of the truth, all of the beliefs that follow from that, what makes things right and what makes things wrong? Where are we going after we die? What is the purpose of history? How do we know things? And what is the meaning of life? Just to name five. Will not be in line with the way that the world really is. So let's look at just a couple worldviews. This is Jane, and she's a Christian. She's a theist. She's a believer in God. This is Joey. He doesn't believe in God. He's a non-believer. He's someone who, an atheist, someone who just doesn't believe that there's a God. Well, let's look at their two worldviews. Jane's view, she believes, is a theistic world. That means that there's a God, that there's a creator who has created the world and is the ultimate source of reality. There is more than just a physical world for Jane. She believes that there's a spiritual aspect to the world, not just a soulish aspect in our own bodies. We are much more than just brains. We are also minds. But she believes that there's a supernatural, supreme being out there. And this person it's personal. God is loving. And God is all-powerful. Joey's view says this, that the ultimate foundation of reality is simply an impersonal, material, chance universe. It's impersonal because there's no mind behind it, because there is nothing soulish or spiritual outside of, well, at all. It's material because all that there is the physical world. There are laws, perhaps, that are operating. There's energy. There are atoms. There is matter, there's physical stuff, but there's nothing beyond that. And the universe is ultimately a chance universe. Most modern cosmologists, people who study the universe and the origin of the universe, will say that the universe began a long time ago. In Jane's worldview, there is a personal God who called this universe into being. But in Joey's worldview, there's not. It simply sprung into existence from non-existence, self-created itself, if that's possible, because you would think that you would have to, at least exist to create yourself. So self-existence seems almost an irrational thought. But out of nothing has sprung the entire universe with all of its complicated laws, and it sits on a fine razor's edge for life. But yet it's done so by chance. There's no mind behind it. There's no purpose behind it. There's no intention behind it. All that there is a physical world. In Jane's worldview, morality is based on God's nature. His nature is the standard, and when his nature is violated, then something is truly wrong. And that nature is loving. God's ultimately a loving being. And so, in Jane's world, things are right and things are wrong, not simply because we want them to be, but because there's an absolute standard that we can appeal to. In Joey's worldview, morality is determined by each culture or person, and there are no real absolutes. Now, this is sort of a broad brush painting, because there would definitely be people who don't believe in God, but would still say that they believe that there are absolute right and wrong, true and false moral claims. The question is how can you ground that, or how can you account for that in a world where there is no absolute standard? And that's why, in most cases, someone who would advocate a position of an atheist would say that morality then depends on your culture. And so one culture has a particular belief about a moral issue, and another culture has its opposing belief. It's very difficult for one culture to enforce its values upon another culture. We hear that all the time. In Jane's worldview, there's a potential for eternal life that doesn't have any of the problems here. What is destiny for Jane? Well, as a believer, she knows that she will have an eternity in the kingdom of heaven where God is going to reverse all of the effects of the fall. We don't live for heaven. We don't live for heaven. We live for the kingdom of heaven in a new heavens and a new earth someday. Heaven is merely a sort of a stopping point on the way for us. We live for the kingdom of heaven that will come when Christ comes and lives on this earth, but he will create a new heavens and a new earth, and we will live embodied on the new earth. That's the potential that Jane's worldview has. Joey's worldview is that the destiny is just oblivion, that this world, that this universe, which sprang into existence out of nothing, is going to eventually continue to expand as it's expanding now. It will get so far apart that the universe will reach a place where it dies essentially of heat death, and everything that's in the universe that's alive, which as far as we know right now is the only things on planet Earth, will no longer exist, nor will there be any possibility for anything else to exist. That's the destiny of Joey's worldview. And so therefore, these questions shape how we answer the question of meaning. In Jane's worldview, we have the image of God, and we are to glorify and love him. You know, you have real value and real dignity, not because you have lots of money. I know most of you, and you don't have lots of money. Not because you're beautiful. I know most of you, and you are. Not because of the positions that you hold. Not because of the achievements in your life. You have real dignity and you have real value, and I need to treat you that way. Not because of anything that you've done, but because you bear the image and likeness of God, and I need to respect that in you. You have true value. You have true worth. It's not something that you have to work up, and it's not something that comes in degrees or you lose in degrees. And so I treat you kindly because you have real meaning. You have real purpose because the greatest conceivable being, the most virtuous, beautiful, significant, good, and powerful being in all existence has stamped his image into you. And he has shared that in some way, and he has shared some of his attributes with you, the ability to think, and to feel, and to create. That's why you have value, and that's why you have dignity. That's one of the reasons why you have meaning. In Joey's worldview, life has no ultimate meaning. There might be meaning with a small m. We get meaning from things that we do. It's sort of a subjective meaning. I get a sense of meaning by being here with you tonight. But if I'm wrong, then in the end, this has been a meaningless experience for all of us, because we're all going to die someday. We're going to go back to dust. We are going to lose our consciousness. The universe is going to go into oblivion, dying of heat death, and no one will remember anything, and nothing that ever happened here from the beginning of time on will ever have mattered. So do I have a sense of subjective meaning right now? Yes, I do. But if I'm wrong, and Joey's worldview is right, there is no ultimate meaning with a capital M or E or A-N-I-N-G. There's no ultimate meaning. And so you're left in some way sort of to create it. And even though most of us here tonight would say, yes, I agree with that. I kind of agree that outside of God, that there's really perhaps no ultimate meaning, we find ourselves pursuing meaning in lots of other ways. David says in the Psalms that in your presence is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Jesus says, I've come to give you life so that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And when we believe that and we live that way, and when we're loving God and we're loving other people and we're glorifying Him in what we do and being obedient, our life not only has some subjective meaning, but it lines up objectively with the fabric of the universe, that the way that God has created it. C.S. Lewis says this: most people, if they really looked into their own hearts, would know that they do want and want desperately something that cannot be had in this world. There are all sorts of things in this world that offer to give it to you, but they never quite keep their promise. The longings that arise in us when we first fall in love, or first think of some foreign country, or first take up some subject that excites us, are longings which no marriage, no travel, no learning can really satisfy. I'm not speaking of what would ordinarily be called unsuccessful marriages, or holidays, or careers. I'm speaking of the very best possible ones. There was something we grasped at in that first moment of longing which just fades away in reality. I think everyone knows what I mean. The wife might be a good wife. The hotels and the scenery might have been excellent, and chemistry might be a really interesting job, but something has evaded us. And I think he's right. And I think that we can all relate to that. There has been something in my life and something in your life that we desperately want, and when we get it, we realize that it lets us down because it doesn't give us what we really thought that it would. I can look back over my life and think of the number of things that I wanted to accomplish because I thought that they would make my life more significant and more meaningful. And in some small way, they did, but not in the way that I had hoped, because when I got what I wanted, I realized that it could never fulfill and come through on the promises that I had made for it to give to myself. And Lewis's point is that only God can do that. So here's a clue to relate to the meaning of life. My son. Several years ago, I went to the wedding of one of the women on the Canadian women's national hockey team. I probably have told this story before. It's one of my favorite stories. There were at least 20 women at the wedding reception that night who had gold medals from the Olympics. This was after they had won the gold medal in Salt Lake City. There were at least 20 more gold medals from the World Championships. There were other Olympic athletes there. When she got up to give her speech at the reception, I will never forget what she said. Out of all of the things I've accomplished, whether it's been the World Championships or the Olympic gold medal, this is the most meaningful and important and the greatest day of my entire life. Because here I am with the husband who I married, who I love, with my family, and all of my friends. Possessions and the acquiring of them does not a significant and a meaningful life make. Either do great accomplishments. But we do find a real sense of meaning in relationships with other people. I can stand on the Huntington Beach Pier and see the most beautiful sunset that you could ever imagine. And if I see it by myself and I have no one to turn to and say, isn't that meaningful, or isn't that beautiful, or isn't that something special, There is something missing and lacking in that experience. But when I can have Nancy, with my wife, with me, and I can point to her and share it with her, it is much more meaningful. We have some friends who work at Walt Disney World, and so they get us in free whenever we would like to go. And as I'm walking around with them, and we're there, and we're going on rides, I think, how much fun would this be if I was the only person in the park? And immediately I think it would be great because I wouldn't have to stand in these lines. But then I realize, even if I got on every ride and I could ride it as many times I wanted, over and over and over again, if I didn't have anyone there in the seat beside me to share it with, how fun would that be? How meaningful would that be? We have a son now. His name is Cody. He's about 6 months old. That picture was taken about a month ago. No, it's not professionally done. I did it myself. He hasn't made our life ultimately meaningful, but he has made more things more meaningful than ever before. Because now I'm not just doing them for myself or for Nancy, but I'm doing them for someone else, a third person. And Nancy and I can both, instead of just directing our love one towards another, we can actually turn and direct our love towards a third person. And when he gets older, he can turn and direct his love towards his mother. And his mother and he can turn and direct their love towards me, and he and I can direct our love towards his mother and my wife. In the same way, the God that we believe in and that Christianity teaches is a triune God in relationship. And a relationship is loving. It's a loving relationship. And the Father doesn't just turn and give his love to the Son, and the Son doesn't just turn and give his love to the Father and reciprocate back and forth. But they can actually turn and love the Spirit, and the Spirit and the Father can love the Son, and the Son and the Spirit can love the Father, and they are a unity. They are a trinity of relational love with one another. In the Christian worldview, in Jane's worldview, the ultimate grounding, the ultimate reality is a loving relationship God. And when you have that as the primary and foundational belief in your worldview, it will radically affect how you answer the question of where is meaning in life found. It will radically affect how you live your life. What is the answer to the question of the meaning of life? I don't think that there's one exact way that you can phrase it. There certainly is a ballpark within which a number of equally good answers can be had or can be found. It's loving God with your heart and your soul and your mind. It's living for the glory of God and enjoying Him forever. It's being obedient to God. It's loving God and loving your neighbor. However that is cashed out, the loving God who is unity in Trinity needs to be at the foundation of that. Otherwise, you will end up with a worldview that may never, ever, ever actually get lived out in practice, but will lead to answering questions like, the ultimate destiny for life is oblivion in a cold, dead, empty, meaningless universe. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for all my friends here. Some old, some new. Lord, some who have had impact on my life in ways that they will never know, that I will never know, but that certainly you know. Thank you that they're here tonight. Lord, we know that as we come as a group to share and to encourage, that we speak to seasoned believers here who have walked with you longer than many of us have, that have an intimate relationship with you. May we learn from them this weekend too, Lord, what it means to be a true follower of you. We're thankful that you are not a God who is far away. You are not a God who is vindictive and a God who is angry, but at your very heart, you are a God who dwells in a community that loves one another. When we believe that, we live that out, makes a radical difference to our life. Would you help us to do that? As we go through the rest of this weekend, would you give us the ability to retain and to grasp and to endure the things that we'll work through in here? In Jesus' name, amen.